shots in the dark. Don't get mirrors.
Welcome, fair listeners, to Much Ado About Wrestling, the show where we firmly believe that pro wrestling is better at preparing an actor for success than studying with Stanislavski. I'm one half of your scholarly presenters, Andrew Terrence Caberline, and with me, as always, is the rave of Richmond, Tyler Ward. Tyler, how are you doing?
Man, I'm doing real good, especially after that entrance. Ooh, the rave of Richmond.
Yeah, well, I felt like we needed to do an overhaul. I know that this is a visual, or not a visual, this is an audio medium, the podcast world. Yes. But I'm looking at you right now, and you look quite different than the last time that I've seen you.
I've gone through some serious changes. I've gone through a repackaging. A creative didn't like the direction that I was going in, so they overhauled my character, had a repackage. I got a new look, new entrance music. It's good.
You kind of have like shades of like Carl Anderson is kind of like what you look
I
like
can
now.
See it. Yeah, yeah.
But like with glasses.
I'm rocking the shaved head to increase my aerodynamicness.
Yeah, are you doing like speed walking? Is that why you're trying to be more
absolutely.
Aerodynamic?
Head down, forward, just get in there.
And you've almost got like a Rick Rude mustache almost going on. It looks really good.
I've never been a fan of the mustache. And I had the beard after I shaved my head, and I was like, maybe I could just mess around with it. So shaved it the other day. I'm rocking the mustache. I'm seeing how I feel about it. It was the weirdest. So I just came back from the beach today, and I was there with my family, and I saw my mom, and I was confident that she was going to be like, shave that crap off your face. You look ridiculous. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like when I saw her, she didn't say a word. She was just like, hey, how are you? And I was like, what? Like you, this is normal to you?
Was she a big like Tom Selleck fan or like Burt Reynolds fan back in the day?
No, she's a Denzel Washington fan.
Oh, I don't think he's ever had any like facial hair really that I can think of.
He had a sweet beard, I think.
Yeah, he had like the like goatee type thing in that. So you've been on a little bit of vacation. I've been on a vacation from wrestling kinda, so much has happened in the past few weeks in the wrestling landscape that we have a lot to talk about. We're back to a normal type episode for us.
We had a few things come up, but we're gonna hunker down and get this done.
Yeah, and
especially we gotta keep up now with the news. Good lord, everything's happening so quickly.
Yeah, a lot has happened. And today, even though we are the liberal arts people in terms of our knowledge and our take on wrestling, today we're going to be focusing more on like the business side of wrestling.
What you all came to listen to.
Yeah, the business. We're going to give you the business.
We're going to talk contracts.
Yeah, and I think it's ironic that today we're going to be talking a lot about money. And we're not actually going to touch Money in the Bank yet, which is the next pay-per-view coming up. But you will hear about that later.
Yeah, which still hasn't happened, by the way.
Yeah, that happens.
I feel like Money in the Bank should have been weeks ago.
Yeah, that will be happening this weekend. But we're not going to be talking about that today. But we are going to be focusing on the business side of wrestling. We're going to do our best to sound coherent that way. I may work near Wall Street, but I am not someone you should trust with your money.
And I may work with people's money, but I don't know how to apply it.
We're going to be like, but I shouldn't.
But I really shouldn't.
Yeah. So it's been a little while since we've had a new vocabulary word, and we're going to change that right now. We're going to get into the word of the day. Tyler, do you want to tell us this word?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to get back into the word, because again, on this podcast, we are here to teach you what wrestling is and why you should love it like we do. So this week's vocabulary word is draw. A draw in wrestling is, without hitting the definition, which I'm gonna let you do in a second, the general sense, if you were to be like, what's a draw? It's the reason you're going to buy a ticket to come see the show. A more eloquent way of putting that.
Yeah, that's the most like logical way to put it, similar to actors that would make you want to see a movie, or, you know, the thing that makes you want to do what you're doing. We're using draw as a noun. It's definitely been a verb before as well. But in wrestling, it's a noun. It is specifically the wrestler whose presence on a card brings in the most money for him or herself, the other wrestlers, and the promotion as a whole. So it's not, in wrestling, being a draw isn't just about that wrestler making the most money, the way that like a boxer where like Floyd Mayweather makes himself a lot of money, right? To be a true draw in wrestling, you have to make money for everybody. You are the gift horse. You're the horse that has the jockey on top of it that ends up winning the Triple Crown like Justified did a mere few days ago, for another sports reference for you. So to be a good draw in wrestling, you have to be a universal, you know, figure. You have to be someone who everybody loves. And while the way that wrestling companies make money has changed a lot over time, up until now, you need a draw in that equation. Otherwise, you're not. It's like a variable in your money making equation, and without it, the answer is always going to be zero.
In terms of thinking like how Hollywood works with movies, when you have a movie that's going into production where specifically they try to hire like an A-list named celebrity because that's the way the movie's going to succeed. Whether or not the script is great or people are interested in seeing it, if they can get an A-list name attached to it that people are super excited for, people will come to see it. That's the Dwayne Johnson, basically all of his movies, besides a few that he's done now, most of them succeed is because he's Dwayne Johnson and they're going to come see it regardless.
Yeah, when you see a trailer for Skyscraper, they're not selling you on the story of Skyscraper. They're selling you on come spend an hour and a half with The Rock, which
come see The Rock again.
Yeah, which is why his movies have done well in the box office. You saw this a lot with Will Smith for a long time, was like the biggest guy at the box office, and it didn't matter what his movies were about. It was just, you got to come see Big Willie style. Big Willie style's all in it, getting jiggy with it. So you might assume that, if I'm trying to figure out who the draw is, then it's whoever is the champion, right? Wrong. A lot of times it is, but it's not, that's not necessarily true. There are a lot of guys throughout wrestling history who, have been either like critically acclaimed wrestlers or have been the world champion or both, and still not drawn a lot of money. And we'll kind of get into who some of these people are and if they were a draw or not. But first, I think we have to break this down into kind of generation by generation, how the draw affected companies. So we're going to start with like the beginning of commercial mainstream professional wrestling. This was in the territory days. I don't know if we've really talked about the territory days at all on this show yet. Could you give us like a quick breakdown of kind of how that works, Tyler?
We might have referenced it. So basically, the territory system within professional wrestling, it was a time in wrestling where there were many promotions, where nowadays you basically have WWE is your monopoly of professional wrestling within the United States. They are the end all be all of professional wrestling. But historically, back in the day, there was, before WWE was this massive, you know, monster company, there was a lot smaller promotions positioned throughout the entire country, and they had a territory system where such promotion only, they were the ones who you'd go to book matches within like the southeast of the country, another promotion like the northeast, midwest, southwest, things like that. And so because each different territory system was its own Federation of Wrestling, they all had their own wrestlers, they had their own champions, and their champions typically would be their biggest drawing point. People want to see that guy win because, again, being the territory system, it was a very like local sports team feel of like, this guy is in our territory, he's our guy, so we want him to succeed. So if someone from, you know, the southeast comes over to the southwest, Like, we want our guy.
You mean
to
like
win.
Georgia Championship Wrestling or Championship Wrestling from Florida? I have the map of the classic
nice.
Territories up in front
Excellent.
Of me.
Where's Southpaw Regional on there?
Ooh, I don't know if that ever made it on the map, but they had a TV deal, which a lot of these
they
territories
did.
Didn't
yeah.
have. I think that's when we say back in the day, too, we mean basically from the beginning of wrestling in the early 1900s until about 1979. This is like the biggest era of wrestling, although it definitely made the least amount of money just because it was on a regional scale. You had the Von Erichs who ran in like near Texas, and you had Vince McMahon Sr. running New York in the Northeast, and you had Vern Gagne in the Midwest as well, and you know, Jim Crockett in the Southeast. Those are the big four ones, but there were a lot more, especially in Canada, with the Hart family and with the
Hart
Russos.
Family.
These are all names that if you're new to wrestling, you're like, who are these people? And there's probably some like really great history book on this, and we'll get whoever wrote it to be on the show at some point. But this is all to say that any TV that they had was on like the local 5 channel. It wasn't on a channel that was going to go nationally. So Tyler might be the, you know, biggest draw in the history of Richmond pro grappling. but if you were to pluck him up and he's like selling out, armory halls and veteran halls and bingo halls, and then you plop him in, you know, California at their local promotion, they're going to be like, who is this guy and why should we care about him? So any story that you had, you'd have to restart if you went to another territory. And this is also why you would see championship reigns were much longer back in the day, because you're running less shows because you're not on TV all the time, but also because if your champion was bringing in the money, there was no, if the champion was bringing in the money by getting tickets sold to the event, because you're saying Tyler is going to be on the show, so I'm going to pay my money to see Tyler. If he keeps selling out, then there's no reason to take the belt off of you.
Why mess with a good thing?
Yeah, exactly. And that's why Bruno Sammartino was champion for, you know, like years at a time. But then all good things have to come to an end. And eventually Vince McMahon Sr. started buying up a lot of the big stars from the territories and brought them to a more wide TV audience, got a national TV right. And a lot of people thought this was going to be the death of wrestling. But as we know, it was not. It was just the death for a lot of the territory companies. So then where do we go after the territory days, and how does a draw work after that?
So at that point, and again, for the territories, you have to remember that their prime source for making money in the territory days was ticket sales at events. Because this is before they had a syndicated like TV show, a way of broadcasting it to millions of people at a time. It was all like very small, local.
Yeah, like hearsay, word of mouth.
Exactly, yeah. So when Vince McMahon Sr. started combining everything together under the umbrella of the WWWF at the time.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Originally Capital Wrestling, and then Worldwide Wrestling Federation.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so he started combining them all under the umbrella of the WWWF. And eventually is when they got their TV deal for Monday Night Raw, correct?
Even before that is WrestleMania is the big thing. But they had Saturday night's main event on NBC. They had stuff on MTV as well, Rock and Roll Wrestling. They started to just be in more homes. And they're also the first people to do pay-per-view,
which is where WrestleMania and things like that came to prominence.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's the thing that you don't realize too, and this is why Bruno Sammartino no longer becomes the draw and someone like Hulk Hogan does, is because Vince McMahon Jr. at this point, the who we now know as Vince McMahon, was the first person to merchandise the wrestlers. You know, you look at the photos of all the great wrestlers up until the early 80s, and they look kind of boring in their attire. You know, I would never call Ed Strangler Lewis boring to his face, because he was like a maniac.
He was the Strangler.
These are people who really like frighten people. but they just wore like solid one color trunks, and they were all kind of a little fat and hairy. That's like basically
they all looked very much the same.
Yeah.
And because at that point they weren't merchandising things. They weren't selling, you know, t-shirts or masks that look like them, bandanas, like action figures, things like that.
Yeah. The fact that no one was selling t-shirts is such a like a stupid idea in hindsight that no one was doing that.
Yeah.
But
how much would you love to have like a Bruno Sammartino t-shirt?
Like? I would love to have like an authentic like Stampede Wrestling like George Hackenschmidt shirt. Like, but they weren't thinking this way. I think that they thought that that would cheapen who they were as a character, and they were dead wrong. Because the reason that people who have never watched wrestling know who Hulk Hogan is because his likeness was on a billion things, and they branded the colors yellow and that orangey red with him. And he became the draw because he could sell you grills and cheeseburger machines and vitamins and workout sets and wrestling buddies.
And he could write his own really bad movies.
Yeah, he certainly could. Although Suburban Commando, I think, is pretty good.
Was awesome. I'm a big fan of Suburban Commando, I'm not going to lie.
We could keep talking about business, or we could talk about Suburban Commando for an hour and a half. We won't subject you to that.
That's a hidden episode.
Yeah, but suddenly, you know, now you're trying to sell pay-per-views to a national audience, so you need someone who appeals nationally, and that's why Hulk Hogan is still arguably the greatest draw ever, because he turned pay-per-view into a viable business for wrestling, him and Vince McMahon. And then a little bit after that, in the early 90s, is when wrestling, not just in WWE but also in WCW at the time, becomes a weekly TV program. And that changes things a lot. And again, like the title reigns in the 80s were still long, but not as long as the territory days. And then once you're on TV every week, the title reigns get shorter and shorter.
Yeah. So you got to keep things new. You got to keep things fresh, especially for like a TV audience. So it was in the 90s. That's when Monday Night Raw was beginning. WCW Nitro was happening. And Each show, each company had their own characters. They have their own draws in this aspect. But with a TV audience, you have a lot more. It's a lot of people say, but like a shorter attention span. I mean, that's,
yeah,
it's,
absolutely.
It's when you're having weekly content given to you over and over and over, like, because again, in the territory days in the 80s, you know, they would have events, you know, every month or so, every couple months, things like that. But when you have a weekly platform giving you content over and over and over, like, they need to keep it new and they need to keep it fresh.
Yeah. And it also changes the way that you are getting paid as a company, because, you know, pay-per-view buys is pretty similar to just good old fashioned selling a ticket for admission, because again, it is like it is a gate that you have to pay for to see. So it's that similar way you can say this person drew because the pay-per-view sold, you know, a million buy rates. On TV, what is important is eyeballs. And because for watching it on TV is virtually free, you are competing against every other wrestling show and every other normal show. And you have to be someone who is so interesting to watch that people who are flipping through don't turn off the TV, so that your Nielsen rating is high. And Nielsen ratings, we won't get into how they were calculated because it made no sense. but if your Nielsen rating was high and you finished in the top 10 in your time slot and program rating, well, then advertisers would look at you and say, oh, I want to pay them to have my commercial run during that time so that more people are watching and can buy my product. And it's kind of sad to say, but the way that wrestling has made money really since the 90s is trying to sell you stuff that you don't want.
Oh, yeah. And then also in the early to mid 2000s, it turned into selling your kids stuff that you don't want.
Yeah, exactly. Although, what are some of the ads that you remember? That just like products being... all the time, because I think the what the products
things,
have
things
been,
that WWE was selling or advertisements that were running during
advertisements
shows?
During like Raw, I think have changed a since in like
my
the past
favorite
10 years.
One that I'll always remember that used to run mm-hmm. from during classic Raws was Stacker 2.
Yeah,
World's
Fat
Strongest
Stacker,
Fat Burner.
That's exactly what I was gonna say too. For a long time, the ads probably. While it was making revenue for WWE, it was not making as much as it could because it was a lot of things that you're like, oh, that sounds like a terrible product. Fat Stacker was great.
I remember Stacker too, because I'm pretty sure that was a product where they even had a few of like the WWE superstars doing like odd commercials them and things like that.
When I need to get serious, I get back to basics. And when I'm looking for a serious boost of energy, I need to feel the sting.
YJ Stinger, made exclusively by the manufacturers of Stacker 2, the world's strongest fat burner.
Feel the sting.
But the ads have become, I think, more general since then. It's not so many male interest. It's not just like all Viagra commercials, which it was for a long time, too.
Oh, no, during the 90s, it was you could tell that they were aiming it directly towards a young male audience.
Yeah, but during the 90s, you also had to prove that you were better than the other direct wrestling company, and this is where the Monday Night Wars came. So it was who can keep people from turning the television. So who were the people in that time period who really were the draws?
Well, if you're looking in the 90s, especially during the Monday Night Wars, this was when WCW, Monday Nitro, that was over on TNT, or that was...
TNT.
On TNT, yeah. And then Monday Night Raw, that was on USA. They were competing for the exact same time slot, the 8 to 10 time slot on Monday nights, or maybe the 9 to 11. So I remember it being later.
Nitro was 8 to 10, or was sorry, Nitro was 8 to 11. Raw was 9 to 11 for Nitro some time. 11. They've changed a lot, but I remember that Nitro tried to get the earlier time period.
Yeah, that primetime Monday night spot, and they ran on the exact same time on two separate networks, so they were battling for essentially the same wrestling crowd. And what WWE had going for them before the end of the Monday Night Wars was that they had great draws in terms of their superstars. They had some of arguably the biggest names that's ever been in wrestling. Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, Shawn Michaels, who was in there earlier, and then later D-Generation X, Mankind, Kane, The Undertaker, like all of these huge names. WCW, I would argue that they didn't have the same level in terms of caliber of superstars, but what they had going for them at the time was when they were winning the Monday Night Wars, they had better writing. They had a little better storylines going. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the draws, they had people like Hulk Hogan, which in terms of the big names, that's kind of what you got is Hogan and Goldberg. After that, you start to fall off to other guys that not too many people know. Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, DDP, Scott Steiner, Booker T.
This is great because the next question I was going to ask, you just set up because you didn't mention this person. And I was going to ask someone who is critically acclaimed as like one of the best wrestlers of all time, but a lot of his contemporaries complain that he's overrated because he never drew any money, is Sting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. See? But you forgot him.
There's a problem is that Sting, we remember his 1 year run of silence where he didn't really wrestle that much on Nitro, and he was incredibly captivating during that. But his real glory day in WCW was
the 80s when he was Surfer Sting.
When he was, bleach blonde, and he looked totally different. And he was really like their number one draw then, him and Ric Flair. And you look at when he was drawing, the size of the arenas were much smaller. They were filming in a lot of the Universal lots, and they weren't being watched nearly as much. Ric Flair, drew a lot. In the old territory days, he's like a holdover from that. He got people to come from other towns to see him. Sting, I don't think, ever did that. And then when TNA was started, when Sting decided not to go to WWE, he came in as like, here we go. We have our big draw. And I don't know that he really ended up being their biggest draw in terms of getting casual fans to watch. I think it's probably Kurt Angle did the most to actually move the needle for them.
I think in terms of bringing in new fans, yeah. I mean, for me, like, I only watched TNA for a short time. I was, like, from 2007 when they first got the Spike TV deal to probably, like, 2009 or 10, like, right after Angle and Christian and Booker T, a lot of the WWE guys were making the jump over. But for me, like, at that time, like, it was... The X Division is what kept me watching, mostly, like AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Christopher Daniels, like that's what I enjoyed.
TNA were the indie movies at that point that like, oh, these are way better quality, but they're harder to find. They're harder for me to give them my money because more people don't want to see them. You know, like I love the Before Sunset, Before Sunrise, Before Midnight trilogy. But no one is going to have seen, like, there will be less people in the world, in the history of time, who have seen that movie than who have seen, like, Ernest Scared Stupid. Like, like that is just, like, a fact, and that's because Ernest could draw, I guess. That was probably not the best example I had, but, like, I think that that illustrates the point. So, Steve Austin and The Rock were really the two biggest by the end of that. Steve Austin was the best, I think, ever at holding an audience.
Arguably the biggest draw in the business ever.
Yeah, he's the best wrestler in the history of free televised wrestling, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know how he did at pay-per-view buy rates, but he would come out for a segment on TV and you wouldn't turn the channel. The Rock is the second best as that, but then The Rock also sells pay-per-views better than anybody ever. So that kind of model of wrestling making money has kind of stayed the same for a long time. It's all money coming from TV rights, pay-per-view buys, and touring and merchandise. Those are like the four big things. And they all, I don't want to say equally, but they have together made wrestling a viable option, particularly for the WWE. The WWE Network was supposed to be the thing that changed that. The streaming subscription model was supposed to make the TV ads a little bit less valuable. And it was supposed to allow them to be able to book the more critically acclaimed wrestlers in higher positions because they wouldn't be relying on TV ratings. The network has not sold as well as they would have hoped, even though we were giving out gift cards for it, trying to boost those numbers up. But something has happened recently that might actually virtually change the way that wrestling makes money.
And that's a good point because like how we've been, you know, going back through like the history of professional wrestling, it's a matter of in the territory system, this is how it worked. This is how people made money. And then that evolved in the 80s and 90s, and that's how people made money. And then that evolved in the early 2000s, and then that's how people made money. And professional wrestling, it's an ever-evolving business of new ways to bring in viewers and new ways to make profit off the product. And so recently, with this most recent news article, that the WWE has actually sold the TV rights to their... You don't like to call it the B show, but their secondary television show.
It's not going
to
be anymore.
Not anymore. Their secondary television show, SmackDown Live. It was airing on the USA Network with their flagship show, Monday Night Raw. But they just recently made a deal with Fox to have that show primarily on Fox television for the next 5 years, I believe the contract was.
Starting in October 2019.
Exactly. And so that doesn't sound like too much, but you have to take it in the context of Fox. It reaches a lot more homes than the USA Network does. So when you take that into consideration, you have to think how this is going to affect the business going forward, in that Fox has a much larger outreach than the USA Network. Are they going to be able to advertise each other's shows because they're competing networks now?
I think you'll see ads for WWE shows on the competing networks within the programming, and that will be it. I don't think Fox. USA is owned by NBC, and Fox and NBC are not exactly trying to help each other out.
Exactly, you know? Yeah. And also when it comes to how this could change how pay-per-views work, right now, all of the WWE's pay-per-views stream on the WWE Network. That right now roughly has a base of about, I think, just under 2 million subscribers, or mm-hmm. around that number. So if you look at it this way, they could put a pay-per-view on the network to their 2 million subscribers, or they could have the pay-per-view on Fox Television, which is already guaranteed to meet so many more viewers than what is already guaranteed on the network. So it's a matter of, should we put pay-per-views live on Fox Television now? Should we do things like that? Like, it doesn't seem like a lot, but this can change mm-hmm. everything.
Yeah, pay-per-view already was becoming a misnomer because of the subscription model, and now you might not have to pay to see pay-per-views, at least the big ones.
You could see WrestleMania free.
Yeah, I think that's probably very likely to happen. Or it will be similar to what UFC has had, where the undercard matches might be live on Fox for free, and then at a certain point you switch over to like the big four matches and you have to pay at that point. Well, it's yet to be seen. There's still a little bit of time for them to figure this out. You might be asking, why did this deal happen now? The rights for SmackDown and Raw have come up in traded networks many times, even just in our lifetimes, you and I, Tyler, and it's never been that big of a deal. Now it's a big deal because of streaming, because of places like Hulu, which has been showing edited versions of Raw and SmackDown for some time, because of people cutting their cords for cable, because not as many people are watching live television. Except for in one particular genre, live sports. Live sports, like the NBA and the NFL, which Fox also has a big part of, those get bought up in little chunks and they only run so many months of the year. WWE is weekly, every week in the year, live sports programming, which makes it the most valuable thing for advertisers now on TV, which is why the WWE is going to make north of $1 billion with a B dollars off of this
cha-ching
deal.
Cha-ching.
Here comes the money. There it is. So that's why this is happening now. Do you think, basically I've written down a bunch of theoretical questions for what this can mean in changing the landscape. Yeah. And let's just go through some of these. How much of Fox's branded, like Fox Sports look, do you think will be represented on SmackDown? Like, how different do you think it will look than USA's Monday Night Raw?
Yeah, so I think they do want a sense of keeping it separate, which they already kind of do. Like, you obviously know when you're watching Raw, you can tell when you're watching SmackDown. In terms of Fox putting like their own spin on it, I'm probably not the best person to ask, because I'll be honest, I don't really watch sports besides professional wrestling. So
don't worry, here are two things I think will happen. Fox has a little jingle that started with Fox, like NFL on Fox, that they have put on a lot of their sports casts, which is the
I know that.
I think that will be on the
See, I would have guessed that was broadcast. Just a football thing.
No, that's also been on a lot of their other sports programming as well, although it's most identifiable with football. So I think you're going to see that. I think Fox is going to try as much as they can to put other Fox sports personalities in the commentary booth. I don't know if they'll get them on the live like broadcast team, but I think that it's very likely that you will see someone like Rob Stone. You're about to see his face a lot for Fox Sports, because he is their commentator for the World Cup, which they bid their rights for. He's also a notoriously big wrestling fan. I think him and Renee Young will have a studio show once a week on Fox Sports about like what's going on this week in wrestling. I think that will probably happen.
Another question that actually brings up for me is the idea of kayfabe within this.
Yeah.
How much do you think Fox is going to approach the show in the terms of more the sports entertainment side? Like, this is a show about wrestling, or more the try to actual the sports side, almost like a New Japan approach of like, this is wrestling that we're watching. Like, I'm curious to see how they're going to approach that. Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be split based on which of their networks their programming is on. That aforementioned theoretical studio show, which isn't that theoretical, I should say. I also listened to a few other sports podcasts, and Rob Stone was a guest on one recently. And when someone suggested, like, are they going to have you, like, in the booth or doing your own wrestling show? He was like, I cannot talk about that, which would lead me to believe that that's something going on. But I think any programming that's on Fox Sports 1 or Fox Sports 2, I think will be presented as a more serious sport. But I think, you know, if you're watching NFL Fox Sunday, and it's at halftime, and John Cena comes into the booth, he's going to be character John Cena telling you to watch SmackDown on Friday. I think if it's on Fox proper, then it's going to be more kayfabe. Also, like, looking, I've really looked at a lot of stuff for this. Looking at their lineup for their, like, their general fall lineup next year, they got rid of a lot of their shows that are more... This isn't how I want to say this, but more like critical, liberal-leaning shows. I think that they are doubling down on being like, we're going to try and be a conservative
entertainment network. Yeah, yeah.
You know, they are big on the NFL, and more, you know, the younger generation is tuning out of the NFL. And they're like, we're going to keep that, and they're going to have Tim Allen's show is coming back.
Super quick side note. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What network is the XFL going to be on? Is that Fox?
We don't know. I don't think they have
it. Oh, okay.
And that is a big... That's also kind of why this is shocking to me, is I don't think any way that, like, the XFL could be on Fox.
Okay, time unless, back to what you're saying.
unless they were willing to be like, we don't want the NFL, and that would be dumb from a business standpoint. Yeah. But I think they want to be a more... I don't even want to say conservative, but they want to be a more, like, lowbrow entertainment network, I think. I think their marketing for the next few years is going to be all the other networks are trying to hit you with these, like, way too, like, smart, unfunny, prestige TV shows, and we're just giving you stuff that's actually fun to watch. And I think that that's why they went out and got this. I think you're going to see... someone like AJ Styles, maybe, in a lot of promotion, like someone who is more identifiable as like a Southern superstar.
Who's a Southern Georgia boy. Yeah.
No, like, I mean, we're laughing. It's a little funny.
It's funny, but like, no, I like, think that's
exactly what's going to happen. What effects do you think this will have on the booking of the shows and on touring? Two things that have really, you know, brought in the money. Now, because they're making so much money through advertising, is the draw dead? Is the draw now just it's WWE? That's the draw.
It's really hard because I think that answer is going to differ depending on who you ask. For people like us, for people who just genuinely love watching wrestling and have watched it for a very, very long time, like, we have our favorites. We have people that, like, I'm interested in this wrestler because I follow them for a very long time, or they have a really cool gimmick right now, and I'm interested in seeing how they do. And, like, specifically, like, for me, like, when Raw or SmackDown comes through Richmond, like, I'm buying a ticket to see people. Like, I want to see Shinsuke Nakamura. I want to see Bobby Roode. Like, well, you know, there's...
And people want to see you, too, because you're the rave of Richmond. You know,
exactly,
they'll be upset if you're not at that show.
They buy the tickets, man. And I think for the more casual fan, nowadays, it's not that they don't have their favorites, but it's a different medium. It's a different business. It's harder for them to have that attention span to focus on something and be like, yes, that's what I want, rather than the product as a whole. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, man. It's a tough question. I don't think, honestly, it's going to change the booking that much, because I think Vince McMahon has an idea for his company and his wrestling that I honestly don't think contracts and TV networks is going to mess with that. I think he is going to stick more to his vision of what WWE is going to be rather than, you know, pandering to a certain audience or something.
I've heard some people say that this now gives them the freedom to book people who are just artistically the best, but I think it actually gives them the freedom to not care what the fans think too. It doesn't matter if Roman Reigns brings in money now.
Yeah. Because they're guaranteed $1 billion in the next 5 years.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
I do think this might be the end of... Not the end. That is drastic. I think they're going to do a lot less touring, actually.
You think in terms of locations that they go, or just number of dates? Number of dates, I think, would stay the same. Because I don't think it's going to change from a weekly episodic show for SmackDown and Raw.
No. I don't think that's changing. Actually. That's what I'm talking about. And I have a few reasons for that. And it's, you know, the biggest reason that big wrestlers who don't wrestle in WWE don't go there is because they say, you know, I don't want to put that strain on my body. I don't want to work that many dates. I want to be home. Well, the reason that they work that many dates is because they're making a lot of their money through... house show tickets, like people, they're coming through Richmond, we got to go see them. Here's the problem is that those sales have been down in wrestling and in every sport recently in the last 10 years, because the presentation of watching a sporting event at home is now so much better with high def and commentary and better TVs at home, that your viewing experience is much better at home than dragging
your
butt and pay
parking there, tickets, wait in line.
Yeah, exactly. So while the Raw and SmackDown, the pay-per-views will still tour, I think there's less incentive. And from a physical standpoint, too, like you're not going to burn out your guys as much. And I think that also opens them up for more opportunity to do cross-media and to appear on other Fox shows and stuff like that, which has been a big aim of their goal, too. So I don't think you're going to see as much touring. Do you think that this will actually mean more money for the wrestlers in their salary?
You know, you would hope, wouldn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think it's possible. Like, you know, when the company in general is bringing in more revenue, it's much more likely that you could see wrestler salaries go up. Just from the pattern of what we've seen in the last year or two, I think it's far more likely, rather than seeing the wrestlers as a whole receiving a higher salary, I think it's much more likely we're just going to see a much larger number of wrestlers being employed by WWE.
Yeah.
In the past year or two, they have just gone hiring trigger happy. They're picking up everyone they can from the indies, from Japan, just all over the place. And I think it's much more likely that we're just going to start seeing so many more wrestlers being hired to the company, but also more programs that they're creating for us for those different talents to be used. They've been doing it for several years, well, not several, but the last 2 years, they've been talking about creating the UK division, some sort of television show specifically showcasing United Kingdom wrestlers. Potentially there was talks about them, not exactly, but they did a survey on WWE Network where they were asking people like, hey, how would you guys feel about maybe seeing a TV 14 MA style wrestling show? So people were like, oh, maybe they could bring back another revamped version of ECW or something like that. So
yeah,
I think that's far more likely, that we're just going to see a lot more people within the company.
Do you think that this means the network is dead, or do you, like, because they don't rely on it for the income now, they certainly won't put as much money into it? Or do you think this means that they will kind of buy up a bunch of independent companies or make their own other NXT UK type programming and just have the network be its own little critical indie darling, the way that Fox has FX? you know.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I don't think they're going to get rid of the network because, I mean, I hope they don't. Like, as a wrestling
fan, me too.
The network is great not only as the primary way that I watch NXT and 205 Live, but also just the collection that they have on there. Like, that sort of accessibility nowadays, I feel like, is vital to something like WWE, where it's a constant medium that you don't necessarily, like, need to know, like, the history of things. But if you want to, they have a service available to you that you can go back and you can pull up a Raw from May of 1997 right now. And you can, like, you know, go back like that. So I don't think they would get rid of it purely just to have that. And again, that monthly subscription, granted, it's only 2 million people right now, but that's still a steady source of revenue right there.
Yeah. It now becomes merchandising rather than a thing that you rely on to, like, be your bottom line.
Yeah,
now it
exactly.
Now it's like selling a t-shirt monthly to people is kind of what it is. Which brings us to our sponsor, Pro Wrestling Crate and Pro Wrestling Tees. They're not actually our sponsors, but they are monthly subscription services
Maybe one day.
Oh, that would be great. there's some sirens behind me, so I think Cesaro is entering. Do you think that I have heard rumors that now maybe the network will be at a tiered system and maybe they will, you know, give Ring of Honor or Evolve or something like that. This is all high.
I haven't heard this at all.
Yeah. They saying like, well, maybe we'll give them an hour a week on the network. I think you'll see at the very least the end of a lot of their like produced studio shows for the network. I think there's no reason for them to do that. I think that's a lot of cost for no.
I'm okay with that because a lot of them are trash.
Yeah, a lot of them are bad. I think it will just be wrestling on it now because they don't need to try to get casual fans to sign up for the network. Just be a hub for just 24-hour wrestling. I got a few more questions about Fox and we're going to move on. How much input do you think Fox will have in the storylines in the product?
Again, I think it's a thing that Vince McMahon has an idea for what he wants his wrestling to look like, and I think he's going to stick to it fairly close. But then again, if, you know, Fox, it is, you know, historically more of a conservative network. Vince McMahon himself, like, it's known he does have ties to very, like, conservative figures, you know, in entertainment. He's a personal friend of Donald Trump, so I mean but at the same time, like, I don't know, like, wrestling has always had some very questionable material on there. Not so much now within the PG area. They've definitely you know, made it more acceptable for everyone. And especially nowadays, I mean, with social media and like how everything has to be, not has to be, but you know what I mean, how entertainment nowadays, it's all PC to the extreme. And I think WWE is certainly aware of that, and I think that I don't know, it's really tough because Vince McMahon, like, we know this over time, like, he's gonna book it however the hell he wants to book it.
Yeah, and the problem is
whether you like it or not, like, that's what's gonna happen. So,
yeah, but now you have someone who could say, I gave you $1 billion, so you need to listen to my input.
True. I don't know. I mean, do you think it's going to affect his booking? Like, this is Vince McMahon we're talking about.
I think that there will be splashes of stuff that Fox will say, we want this, and they'll put it on there. And maybe Vince will smartly be like, okay, well, I'm going to put out exactly what you asked for, even if he knows it's going to fail early.
Yeah.
Have it be out there and be awful and be like, see, like, this is evidence that you should let me do my thing.
Yeah, he's gonna be like, this is my business. I know this business. Yeah. Let me do it.
We know that a big part of what killed WCW was having too much influence from Turner executives. It was great to have their money, and then it was a big hindrance to have their control and that they didn't really care about wrestling. I think Fox does care about the wrestling. I think it can be a negative, but I would be really shocked to see it really hurt WWE badly, especially since there's no one really breathing down their neck on a financial level at all. I imagine the rosters will get rebooted a bunch. I think that SmackDown has to be the A show now.
See, that's what I think is going to be very interesting, because Raw has always historically been the A show. And I think Vince McMahon, like, regardless, I think Raw is still going to be his A show. And yeah. I know it doesn't make sense now that Fox, it's clearly the larger platform. It's going to reach so many more homes. You would think that SmackDown would be the A show. You're going to put your top stars there. But I don't know, man. I think because Raw has always been Vince McMahon's baby, like, I still think that's going to be, in his mind, the A show.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
But of course, like, if it were to, you know, since SmackDown it has the much wider audience now, like, in relation to that, do you think that we could see them, like, flipping the rosters around, like moving someone from Raw over to SmackDown now, or
yeah,
maybe a big draw of like Ronda Rousey?
Ronda Rousey is the one that I think will move from Raw to SmackDown, and I think where Ronda goes is a good indicator on where the importance lies, because the only reason that she went to Raw was because, like, well, we got to have our biggest draw on the biggest show.
Yeah.
So if she quickly moves, I think that would be an indicator. And by quickly, we mean like by October 2019. So there's still
a lot of time
for this to happen.
Yeah, she's a whole year and change of storyline. So
we got one more big question about this. So now we don't rely really on one person to be the draw anymore. Now you don't need to quite as much. I think we've established that.
Yeah.
Will this marketing money in WWE's stock, which has been at a new all-time high like every week for the past few weeks seemingly, and being on national network television, Fox is one of the four networks that's in the most homes in America. Will this bring pro wrestling back to the mainstream relevance that it had in the late 90s?
Fingers crossed, right?
Here's hoping.
I would love to. As a fan of professional wrestling, like, anything that makes it better and more successful and widely, you know, accepted, like, I'm all for it. I don't think that you're going to be able to bring professional wrestling back to the height that it had in the 90s and the Attitude Era. Mm-hmm. Like, there was just something, like, so special about that time that also, but it was also you had to take in, like, not only what the product was and what they were putting out at the time, but also what kind of product they were allowed to put out, the audience that they were aiming for, just the entertainment business as it was in the 90s. Like, I don't see it getting to that height again. I would love it if it did. That'd be amazing. But I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's going to become more popular, but not in the way that it was in the 90s, wherein in the 90s, the demographic that really brought it to the mainstream was male 18 to 35, right?
Yeah.
SmackDown's
going to be... Which is exactly who they were aiming for.
Yeah, yeah. SmackDown's going to be on Friday nights. You know who isn't generally at home on Friday nights? People 18 to 35. But you know who is? Kids. So I think that the SmackDown program is going to skew even younger, and I think having it in Fox, you know how many kids, like, don't have cable but want to be watching what are, like, the cool things that everyone's watching? Like, it's gonna kill for kids on Friday nights, I think. Which is historically one of the tougher nights to put programming on, but not for sports. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, sports entertainment. So I think kids is going to explode. Or maybe there's, like, enough bars will just have it on Fridays. That's true, will move the needle, you know? So I think whatever happens, this is such a big head start for WWE that I can't see it being a failure. So knock on wood, now that I just jinxed the hell out of them. But we should move on to spend a few minutes on the people who are not WWE, the indies, the Ring of Honors, the New Japans of the world. How do they respond? How are they going to make money now? I know that there's a particular, it's not even a promotion, it's just an event that's going to happen that I know you want to talk a little bit about, Tyler. If you want to tell us how that particular event is going to make money.
Oh, yes. So, well, first off, they've already made the money.
Yes, yes, they have it in their hands.
So, specifically for the question that we just had about how are these indie promotions like Ring of Honor, Impact Wrestling, New Japan, like how are they going to make money now with this new Fox deal? And I think the same way they always have. At no point, I think, in the past 15 years has 15 to 20 years has any wrestling company actually had it like a chance at being a contender for WWE.
No.
And so they already have to approach their money-making plans in that aspect. And again, like, you know, with as large as WWE has become in the past years, I mean, Ring of Honor, New Japan, Impact Wrestling, they're thriving. They're making money. They're doing well. Impact, they've had some stumbles along the way. But
they've had to rebrand, but now I finally feel like we are calling it Impact and not TNA. I think they've really
which is
separated
a good thing.
Themselves from their past. I think I think that they might sell their library to WWE soon, but that's neither here nor there. We can talk about
neither
that
here nor
later.
Here. Yeah. But yeah, so the show that we are talking about, this is a show that is going to be September 1st in Chicago, Illinois. This show was called All In. What this is a wrestling event that has been purely financed by a group of wrestlers themselves in the American Nightmare, Cody Not Rhodes, the Young Bucks, Matt and Nick Jackson. I think that they're the three financiers of it.
They are,
Within that, they have booked a lot of their friends, fellow members of the Bullet Club, Kenny Omega, Marty Scurll, and they're bringing in a lot of other indie talents from Ring of Honor, New Japan, the former IWGP Heavyweight Champion Kazuchika Okada is going to be there. They have a lot of veteran wrestlers coming in to do things like that. Stephen Amell from
Arrow
on CW is going to be there.
Ray Mysterio.
Ray Mysterio. So they self-financed this show, and they recently the tickets went on sale, and they sold out a 10,000 seat arena in roughly, I believe, it was 26 minutes.
Yes. Yeah.
Which. Wow, that is wow.
That's pretty quick to sell out, a true sellout too.
Yes.
It's the first time that a event that is not promoted by WWE or WCW has sold out 10,000 tickets since 1993.
Bam. Wow, yeah. 25 years.
Ooh. Yeah, that's some impressive quick math you just did. I don't know if it was right. I didn't check it, but I'm just assuming that you got that.
I'm pretty sure it is.
yeah. There's only one match on the card right now, and the match is very intriguing to me for a historical reason. And it is a match currently right now for the NWA championship between their champion Nick Aldis and Cody Not Rhodes. Cody's dad, Dusty, was the best or the second best champion, NWA champion, back when that title mattered, depending on who you ask. The NWA, the National Wrestling Alliance, was a governing body of all the territories. They were supposed to have the champion that was the champion of all the territories, and they would travel with that belt. And then you'd be like, oh my God, the NWA champion's coming to our territory this month. I have to go. It was a draw in and of itself. It hasn't mattered for a long time. And the fact that this mostly Ring of Honor crew has people from New Japan and from NWA, which is now run by Billy Corgan, the former Smashing Pumpkins frontman, the fact that it has all these companies kind of working together is very interesting. Is that how they're going to make money from now on? Do all the other companies outside of WWE kind of have to recreate their own territory system again?
I mean, it's possible, but at the same time, I think this is very much a lightning in a bottle sort of thing. Does this mean that, you know, Ring of Honor or Impact can sell out a 10,000 seat arena on their own like next month or something? No, of course not.
Yeah.
We've already seen New Japan has a show, I think like a few months coming up at the Cow Palace in California, mm-hmm. that seats about roughly 15,000, I think. And they have only sold, what, about 3,000-4,000 tickets maybe?
Yeah.
I think something like that.
Cow Palace holds about 13,000.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
But they haven't sold nearly enough tickets to sell out. Mm-hmm. And I think specifically with All In, it's a very lightning in a bottle situation where this is the first time anyone has tried to do this. And I think because of that, it was a matter of a lot of people wanted them to succeed. Yeah. And I think now that they have, like, that's awesome, and we love that. That's so great. But I don't see this becoming like a standard thing within the indie promotions. I don't think so.
Then let me ask you, Tyler, if you are running Ring of Honor, or if you're running New Japan, or if you're running the NWA, or if you're running Impact, I know they all have their own very specific challenges, but if you're running one of them, how do you keep making money right now?
Well, it seems, so it sounds kind of counterintuitive, but like, it seems with, you know, streaming services nowadays are, it's a great money, you know, that's the way to make money nowadays, because, you know, pay-per-view is a dying business model. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I think New Japan, they already have their New Japan World streaming app, which, again, we've talked about before, needs a little work for the mm-hmm. American audience. Yeah. But I think in terms of having some sort of steady revenue, that is probably the best way. I don't know if Ring of Honor has a streaming service.
They do.
They do. Okay.
Honor Club.
Yeah. I don't think Impact does, but I'm sure that's going to change.
Impact
soon.
Used to host all of their old like pay-per-view matches on their YouTube. They were just up there for free. Yeah. And I think that will be dead soon if it isn't already pretty much dead.
But yeah, so I think, and what we've already seen with these indie companies is a lot of cross promotion between each other. You are all the time, Ring of Honor and New Japan have always had a very cohesive relationship. You will always see Ring of Honor guys wrestling in the, you know, the G1 or the Best of Super Juniors or mm-hmm. vice versa. You'll have New Japan guys coming over and wrestling in Ring of Honor. And just recently, I think we're starting to see Impact join that business of having crossover stars between these three companies.
Yeah, which was historically something that they, when they were TNA, they poached everybody from Ring of Honor by saying, now that we're on TV, you can't wrestle elsewhere.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
that became a big problem for them. But now that's gone.
And I think now they're trying to be more open to working with these other companies. Most recently, we've just seen Taiji Ishimori, the mm-hmm. new Bone Soldier, had a great run in the Best of Super Juniors over New Japan, but he's going back to Impact, supposedly.
Yeah. Which means now they'll have a Bullet Club member on Impact Television, which is astounding.
Huge crossover.
Yeah.
For that. So, yeah, I think we could definitely see these smaller indie companies and maybe stuff in the UK, you know, Progress, Defiant Wrestling, things like that, joining in on the business. But again, you got to understand within this, you know, business, I mean, WWE has reached that level of you can't really compete with them. You just have to find a way to sustain yourself. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
No one, I honestly, I don't think anyone will ever compete with WWE again, especially with this new TV deal. They have completely, they will never be an actual competitor to WWE.
No.
So,
Yeah.
How? Yeah. I mean, that's it. There's nothing else to say.
That's the
end
all be all.
How these indie companies now make money is entirely separate from how WWE makes money.
Yeah. There's there's almost a ceiling too, because you can't be so successful that WWE then puts you in their crosshairs.
Yeah, because then they're gonna buy you.
Yeah. Yeah, and they already have been buying a lot of people.
Yeah. So New Japan, watch out.
Speaking of all this buying and selling. I've had enough of the stock talk, this money talk. I want to get back to artistry. And Tyler, I consider you an artist.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, no problem. You're an incredible builder. And we haven't gone in the Kayfabe 5000 in quite a while. Have you done any updates to it? Can we jump back in?
Well, I have. You know, we've had a lot of time off here from the Much Ado About Wrestling podcast. We've had a lot of time to work on a lot of things. So I've been messing with a few things. Now, don't get your hopes up too high here.
Done.
It's still in the prototype phase. Mm-hmm. But I have added one flux capacitor to the Kayfabe 5000.
Did you say flux capacitor?
I did.
Frankie Kazarian's old finishing move?
If my calculations are correct, this is going to allow us to not only step into the world of kayfabe, but also it will allow us to step into the world of kayfabe within the future.
Ooh. So we're going to go to the future and then come back from the future? See how I avoided a copyright issue there?
No, Andrew, that's completely absurd.
Oh, okay. Is it fair to say that once we crank this baby up to 88 miles per hour, we're going to see some serious shit?
Yeah, actually, yeah, I would say that. That is fair.
Great.
But yeah, so I think if my calculations are correct, which I'm pretty sure they are, I checked them 88 times.
Good.
If we go into the Kayfabe 5000, flip that switch, we will not only be thrown into the future, but we will come back with a brand new knowledge of what wrestling is going to look like down the line.
Great. I can't wait.
All right. I mean, I didn't know I was going to maybe get ready for it, but you know, you just got to hop into these things.
Got to hop into it. Is the flux capacitor fluxing?
Well, it's certainly capaciting.
Oh, okay. That's a good sign. All right. Do you want to crank it on and turn it on?
I'm going to do it. Okay, here we go. Flip that switch. Man, you know, you never think that somebody like Noam Dar is going to succeed so much, but wow, I'm happy for that guy.
Yeah, that was, oh man, we've seen a lot in the future. The future was really bright. We didn't have to wear shades, but it was an incredible journey that we just went on. Oh, it feels good to get out of the kayfabe too. We opened up the suicide doors and stepped out. We have a lot of knowledge.
The suicide doors was a nice touch, though, right?
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was really nice. It's good to see that those are still in style in the future.
Yeah,
man. There's so many things that we now have knowledge of that we can talk about. I mean, I could just tell everybody what the results of sporting events are going to be so they can bet on them, but I think that would be immoral.
Yeah. That's probably not the best idea.
So maybe we should just stick to wrestling type things.
Yeah. I'm cool with that.
Do you want? Can I ask you to start sharing some stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, look, I'm a huge fan of Kenny Omega. He's one of my top guys, and I gotta say, man, after coming back from the future and seeing what he's been doing, wow, I am proud of him. Look at this man. He's year long run with the IWGP Heavyweight Title. That is impressive, man.
Who did he defend it against? I can't remember all the people, but all the people he's defended against.
We definitely saw some. I mean, you gotta love that Wrestle Kingdom culmination that he had with Kota Ibushi. Great match, amazing match. Yeah. I was a big fan of the triple threat he had with the Young Bucks, man. That was crazy. Who saw that coming?
I certainly did not, but then we did see it. The number of spots in that match were pretty entertaining. In fact, it's now referred to as the best triple threat match. It has taken over the TNA Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels match. So now the greatest three-way match of all time is the Young Bucks versus each other and Kenny Omega.
It was great. I think Meltzer gave it 33 and a third stars.
Yeah, which is not the highest that he's ever given, but it's the second highest now. Did you think it was interesting, the announcement that he made right after Wrestle Kingdom?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially how he made that announcement. Wow.
Yeah, he ascended. There was a platform in the middle of the ring, and he was standing on it, and it ascended up really high above so that everyone could see him. And he announced that your prediction was correct, Tyler, that he did decide that now that he had achieved everything he could in New Japan, that he was going to go to the WWE. So I'm excited for you all to see what he ends up doing there, but we won't get into that. You just asked what was going on a year into the future with Kenny.
But God, you gotta love seeing success like that, especially for a guy like Omega. However, not so much success for our friend CM Punk, though.
Yeah. I have to correct myself a bit because my calendars are all mixed up. But a few days before this podcast that you're listening to now, I think he just won a court case against WWE doctors. Which that was a nice moral victory, but it happened right in the training period for his fight at UFC 225. Did I get that right?
That's right.
Was that right? Okay, good. the time travel, it really messes with your memory. And that fight did not go well. It was very embarrassing. And people thought you would never see him fighting in mixed martial arts again, and they were wrong. He went to the hole for a bit and then signed with Bellator. And you know, again, he was trotted out as this big pay-per-view draw, and he'd sold some pay-per-views, and they did it from Chicago. And he didn't get past the first round, and he got knocked out. I think now, with the first time of him being knocked out, you would think that would be the end of his MMA career.
You know, you'd think, but I couldn't believe after that when he put on a lot of weight, and he thought, you know, he could maybe go up a couple weight classes or two.
Yeah.
But then the fool hops in there with Rampage Jackson and just...
Yeah. With him and King Mo, and it's like, none of these people can win anymore, and Punk could never win as an MMA fighter, and it was like, well, maybe he will finally come back to wrestling, but... You know, WWE fired him on his wedding day, and they sued him before his second big professional fight, and he just doesn't have any interest to do that, no matter how much we want him to. I'm sorry to tell you that even down the line, he really has, you know, cemented himself as the even more modern day Bret Hart, but he's not going to come back to WWE, I don't think, ever.
No, we
didn't go that far into the future, but...
No. I did see that article, though, that he was considering doing commentary for the Cubs. And, hey, that could be a good thing. I think, you know, things might turn around for Punk.
Well, that's good, because he was going to try to get his way onto the Chicago Blackhawks. I'm sorry. They changed their name in the future because of PC reasons. They're now just the Chicago Hawks. And he was going to try to be one of their goalies now that he put on some weight from being a heavyweight, but he's never played competitive hockey. So didn't work out that well when he let in 8 goals on the first game. There was a more interesting future just 6 months down the line from now, with the Universal title, Tyler. I think Brock Lesnar dropped it to someone. Who was that?
He did. So Brock Lesnar's reign had finally come to an end at SummerSlam, and it's exactly what everyone thought it was going to be. Braun Strowman finally picked up that Universal title, man. That was in a quite frankly, a shockingly amazing match.
That one is so true. that I really remember it vividly, and I really hope that we're in the right timeline, and that is exactly what I'm remembering correctly. Yeah.
Hopefully, you know, we didn't butterfly effect anything, and the future is safe.
Yeah, people were really shocked that that match went more than 15 minutes long, but it closed out a way too long SummerSlam show. Did you like the exact finish of the sequencing?
I did. So, you know, I'm glad that they kind of had a throwback to that Fatal 4-Way they had last year, where they broke not only every announce table, but they also pulled out a few from the audience. I'm sorry, from under the ring to break. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad they had a throwback to that, where Braun Strowman picked up the Spanish announce table and set it on top of the American announce table, and then power slammed Brock through both of them at the same time. Like, never seen that spot, but wow, that was cool.
Yeah, I thought that was amazing. There's one more thing I kind of want to talk about, and this is further into the future. This is 3 years into the future, because before we got in the machine, we were talking about what network that the XFL was going to air on, and I now have the answer to that. Their inaugural season is going to be on the newly made FS3, Fox Sports 3. It's going to be most of their programming. It's mostly that, bass fishing, and paid promotional stuff. So, like, how to, like, you know, regenerate your hair, or like the set it and forget it machine.
ShamWow 3.
Yeah, exactly. So all of the games are going to be broadcast there, except for the XFL Championship, which will be on FX proper. Did you enjoy any of the product? Was there anything that stuck out about it to you?
So I gotta be honest. I mean, I think the actual football was mediocre at best. But you know, I gotta love the throwback. I'm super glad that they brought back He Hate Me, and that he was reffing for the games now. You know, I think he's doing a great job out on that field. Trying to call it down the middle.
It was great in the post games when he, in the particular, in the East Division semifinals from last year, when the Renegades lost in the last second to the Comanches on kind of a blow-in holding call from He Hate Me. And it was great when the coach of the Comanches, a newly retired Tim Tebow, got on there and said, you know, it's not in my ability to hate anybody, but I think it's fair to say that from the entire Comanches organization that we hate him. Yeah, I thought that was one of the better post, like, press conference moments of all time in sport.
Yeah, it was definitely good. I mean, you know, I'm happy for them. I'm happy that the XFL is finding some measure of success. You know, and I think they're going to stick it out. I heard that their deal with Fox Sports 3 is coming up to an end, though, and I don't think we're going to see them renew. But they do have a few offers in from some other networks. I know the CW is looking to pull them on there, maybe add in a little more dramatic elements into the sports on there, add a few young teen stars. I think that could be really good.
Yeah, I've heard that they may merge with Netflix. Netflix might buy them. You know, there's been so many other streaming sites since Netflix's heyday that they're really hurting for cash. So now they might rebrand as Netflix FL. So I think that that's really interesting. We'll see if that happens.
That's good branding. I'd buy that t-shirt.
I mean, they have the same colors, so it works out. Well, I think that's really all of the stuff about the future that we should let people know at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we could bore you guys right now with, you know, who's going to be the next president or something like that. But you
of space. Yeah,
stuff.
We'll let you figure that out in due time. And speaking about in due time, I think we've taken all the time we can for this week.
I think so, yeah.
Is there anything that you want to leave us off with, Tyler, plug-wise?
Oh, man, you know, I don't have too many plugs right now, just the standard ones. Check us out on our website at muchadowrestling.com or on Twitter at adowrestling. You can also email us questions for the kayfabe 5000, muchadowrestling@gmail.com. All of my standard plugs, check out Turbo Mansion. We are now on Spotify, YouTube, iTunes. You can find us everywhere.
Only one of those survives in the future. Don't you guys want to know which one?
Don't you want to know? But yeah, so I'm going to have some kind of cool news coming down the pipeline in a little bit that I'll tell you maybe on the next episode. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, I'm going to plug something really quickly, even though it's a month out from now. Our friend Matt Schott, who's on the podcast a while ago, his show, The Saga of the Shining Emblem, I can't remember the chapters, but that's okay. The Saga of the Shining Emblem,
I think.
Yeah, The Legend of Destiny, you're right, is going to have another live performance on Sunday, July 1st at 7 p.m. So if you're in New York, and this time it's easier to get to because it's at the Pit, but it's at the Pit Striker, which is their bigger theater. So he's moving it up in the world. So go see that show. It's a lot of fun. I'm not going to tease anything because who knows when any news I might have might come out, but we'll keep coming on. So until next time, we're going to leave you as always with the words of the immortal William Shakespeare. If wrestling be the food of love, fight on.
And get these hands.
Ooh.